Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Michael Reese from Reese Richmond LLP. I am counsel on behalf of the appellant. This time I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal defense.
Okay, you have a clock in front of you?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, just keep an eye on it and whatever you've got left over will be yours.
Thank you, Your Honor. This appeal is from the lower court's order granting defendant's motion to dismiss and dismissing with prejudice plaintiff's complaint against defendant for violation of California and New York's consumer protection laws. This appeal seeks reversal of the lower court's decision with respect to the claims pertaining to the product known as the drumstick ice cream product. This case is about defendant allegedly substituting original ingredients in its children's ice cream product, which is popularly known as the drumstick, with a cheaper filler ingredient in order to cut costs and increase defendant's profits at the expense of its customers' health. This substitute ingredient is called partially hydrogenated oil, an oil which scientists have deemed to be highly harmful to humans, both children and adults alike. The claims of this action are based on defendant's misleading marketing of its ice cream product as being made from original ingredients and containing 0 grams trans fat. Both of these representations are...
What does original ingredients mean? I don't think anybody thinks that they're still using the ingredients from 1928, right? The same oil that was there, or the same butter, or whatever it is that goes into these things, right?
So there actually are a great amount of consumers that believe that products based on original ingredients from either the 20s or the teens or even last century are in fact those ingredients. There's a whole market.
You don't mean those ingredients. You mean ingredients like those, but made today. Nobody thinks it was a big vat of butter that's still using up since 1928, right?
That's correct. And in fact, ice cream used to be made with just 4 or 5 ingredients. There's a whole movement on this. It's called the slow artisanal food movement. People look for this. They look to know that it's not from the original vat of butter, but it's still using the same ingredients such as butter,
chocolate. But how do we know that those ingredients are any healthier than what's being used today?
Well, that's actually, it's an interesting question because it doesn't necessarily matter for the purposes of this case. The purpose of this case is defendant used misleading language.
I thought I heard you open up the consumer thought, and this false and misleading claims that the consumer thought they were getting healthy food because it referenced the original ingredients, and in fact, they were not getting healthy food, they were getting partially hydrated oil.
Well, that may be the consumer's motivation in purchasing this product. It's not one of the elements that you have to prove of the consumer protection statutes. All you have to prove is the defendant make a statement that was deceptive or confusing. Did the plaintiff rely upon that? There's no question here that the plaintiff relied upon that. So it's a very simple question. By making these representations that its product was original, describing the product as the original sundae cone, describing it as the original vanilla, was it reasonable for consumers to assume, well, that means that the product is in fact from the ingredients that were from the original product? And again, it's not from the original vat of butter, but it's made from butter as opposed to some artificial substitute. And the issue we have here is that we know that it's not from the original ingredients because it contains an ingredient called partially hydrogenated oil.
It says 0 grams of trans fat.
That is correct. And there are two statements at issue, and there's really two statements for your honors to consider. The first issue is with respect to the original statement, the language used by the defendant to describe its product. And it's important to underscore how important this language is. It's on the product, all over the product. It's stated no less than 3 times. Defendant's gone to the extent to actually trademark the product, to trademark the term original. Now defendant claims in its papers, both before the lower court and before your honors, well, that term original has no meaning. Well, that's just not true. It used language that it meant to that's confusing to consumers, that's deceptive to consumers. And there's a case directly on point ruled on by the Ninth Circuit that shows that the lower court erred in dismissing that particular claim. And that's the Williams v. Gerber's product case decided by this court in 2009. Your Honor, with respect to the 0 gram trans fat issue, there's no question that that claim is sufficient as a matter of what the reasonable consumer interpreted.
To what extent is your argument about the use of the term original or classic tied to this statement of 0 grams of trans fat?
They can be separate. I think it's the overall misleading packaging. You look at the entire packaging, just as this court did.
Let me, do you have a separate claim based upon the statement of 0 grams of trans fat?
Yes. And in that, and that's the
yes. Is that yes?
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay. And the issue before the lower court there, and why the lower court dismissed that, the lower court said that 0 gram trans fat claim is preempted. So it never did analysis.
Right, but isn't that because the federal regulations at issue here require that when the product has less than 0.5 grams of fat per serving, that the manufacturer must state that it's 0 grams of fat?
That is correct with respect to the nutrition fact panel, which is on the back of the box. There's no requirement that those statements be made on the front of the packaging or in other advertising, which is what defendant did here. And what's important
they
is...
Would it be more confusing to the consumer if they said two different things?
Well, the defendant should not have made any representation regarding 0 grams trans fat on the front of the packaging. In fact,
it's proper for them to do that.
It's
long as they have the other warning.
That is correct. Which
see the nutrient content for whatever for fat, the total content, total fat.
That is correct. And we cited in our complaint, we cited in our papers that the FDA had issued a warning letter saying your product, your use of the...
They issued that letter directly to Breyers Ice Cream.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or did it go to the manufacturers of food products at large?
No, the letter was sent directly to Dreyer's Brand Ice Cream in Oakland,
product?
California. That's correct.
There were two letters, right?
There were two. There was a press release and there was a specific letter sent to the defendant specifying this particular product as well as the Dibs product. We're not contesting any claims regarding the Dibs product. The court dismissed that on standing grounds.
What is it that you want the district court to do with respect to the statement? What relief are you seeking with respect to the statement of 0 grams of trans fat that's on the front label of the box? We know that it's removed. We know that's they're not doing that anymore.
Sure. When the claim was brought, they were still doing it. We would primarily want some type of injunctive relief, just like the FDA achieved through its warning letter that was sent. So in other words...
Well, that aspect of your relief would be moved, right? Because it's not on the label anymore.
It's not on the label anymore, but you could still get injunctive relief, which would prevent it from being placed on the label. Again, the point being, though, is that the standard is exactly the same. And this is where the court erred on the preemption issue with respect to the 0 grams trans fat. The court said 0 grams trans fat on the front of the label is an express nutrient claim. That's true. It makes a representation regarding the amount of trans fat product. The issue, though, is the court then stopped its analysis and said, well, because it's an express nutrient claim, it must be preempted. And that is not what the law requires. The law requires a fuller analysis. First, you have to determine whether or not it's an express nutrient claim. And then you have to determine, well, even though it's an express nutrient claim, is the law that the plaintiffs are suing under different than the FDA law? And in fact, the court did not do that analysis whatsoever. The court had done that analysis and followed governing precedent, which is the In Re Farm-Raised Salmon cases by the California Supreme Court in 2009, which follows recent Supreme Court decisions saying there's a strong presumption against preemption in situations like this, especially involving food, which the state has regulated over 150 years in the state of California. If the court had done that analysis, it would have found that the requirements are no different. In fact, 343 subsection A of the NLEA, that's 21 U.S.C., states you cannot label a product if the labeling would be misleading or false in any particular manner. And that's exactly what you have here. Now, the court certainly could have the opportunity to craft a remedy. And in fact, the UCL is a claim that's tried before the judge. It's not a jury-based claim. But the court didn't even go that far. The court just said, because it's an express nutrient claim, therefore, per se, it's preempted. And that's just not correct. You have to do a fuller analysis to determine whether or not the claims would contradict what the FDA is trying to achieve.
Let me get back to the claim about the original ingredients. I have a point that's clear on that. How does the consumer know what the original ingredients are? I mean, it's one thing to say, there's this sort of ingredient that more than the consumer doesn't expect. But I don't know what they put in ice cream in 1928.
From our research, we do know that they did not put partially hydrogenated oil in their ice cream.
The question is not what they did or didn't put in. The question is, when you say people are misled, they say, the same ingredients. But, they would have to know what it is the same ingredients are.
Not necessarily. In fact, the Gerber's case...
Is this a new ingredient, newly invented?
That is correct. It's a newly concocted ingredient invented in laboratories. It's often used as a preservative. It's been determined to be highly unhealthy. It's something that didn't exist in 1928 to be used in products such as the drumstick ice cream cone. Though it cannot be an original ingredient. A consumer would not be able to figure that out on his or her own. And that's just like in the Gerber case, where they made certain representations on the front of the packaging.
Well, doesn't that sort of point to the fact that the original is sort of meaningless term? Let's see, what does the label actually say about that?
Well, yeah.
It doesn't say original ingredients, right?
It says original vanilla. And it says
original sundae cone, right?
Right, and it also says original vanilla.
Okay.
In fact, that's the name of the product that the plaintiff bought on two separate occasions, believing, in fact, contained original ingredients.
It doesn't say original ingredients.
It doesn't.
Original vanilla or original sundae cone.
Sure.
I mean, original sundae cone just sounds to me like somebody would say, we were the first ones to do a sundae cone.
Which actually is not true either, because that was done in 1904.
Well, that may not be true, but I'm not sure that you're making a claim based on that.
That is correct, but I think what's important to focus on is what is actionable under the consumer protection laws at issue here. The California Supreme Court and this court has also recognized that the claims don't have to be actually false. In fact, they can just be deceptive or confusing. And you certainly have that here, where they're using claims original, where Your Honor says, it seems like they're saying one thing, plaintiffs have said, I interpreted it to mean original ingredients. Courts in other jurisdictions where they've seen that term original have said, that obviously means that it's the original formula. We cite to the Kremers case, which pertains to Coca-Cola, and which I think also memory may just serve us that was a...
You're down to 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to save the rest for rebuttal this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the other side.
Good morning, Your Honors. Carmen Zerlinga from Mayo Brown for Dreyer's Grand Ice Cream Company. May it please the Court. In his several complaints in this case, the plaintiff appellant alleges that Dreyer's has advertised its drumstick dessert products as nutritious, wholesome, healthy, better than other frozen desserts. But in reality, none of these terms appear anywhere on the product label or in any other advertising cited in the complaint. To the contrary, the label pictures a sundae cone, tall and proud, and it is described in the advertising as a creamy and delicious frozen dairy dessert, chopped with a chocolatey, top with a chocolatey coating and roasted peanuts on a crispy sugar cone with a chocolatey lining and my favorite, a chocolatey surprise.
In other words, a reasonable consumer would not think this would be a healthy, tasty dessert.
I don't see how. And so I asked rhetorically, do words mean precisely what the plaintiff's counsel say they mean, nothing more and nothing less? Good students of literature will recognize the reference to Wonderland, but those are not the rules that govern here. The chasm between plaintiff's allegations and an actual claim is too wide and too deep to be bridged by existing legal doctrine. And so the district court was correct to dismiss this case.
Trans fat got you into some difficulty with FDA, right?
It did and it didn't. It earned us a letter from the FDA, which is a warning letter. And many other people...
A warning doesn't usually mean a good thing.
A warning means... The letter is not.
If you're driving along the highway, you're speeding.
And the officer says, I'll give you a warning this time.
That is a good thing.
But it's not as good as having stayed within the speed limit, right?
Probably not. But to be clear, the warning letter is not a determination under the law of the circuit, under the Biotic case that we cited in our brief. There was no adversarial proceeding. Nothing occurred. A letter was sent by a lower-level administrator that we think is incorrect.
And then what happened?
Absolutely nothing.
Follow up or?
Absolutely nothing happened.
Well, you removed the 0 grams of trans fat, correct?
It was gone before the letter was sent, ironically. So, you know, you use the term
trans fat to it now?
Excuse me?
You've added more trans fat?
No, we just took it off because, you know, companies change their labels all the time.
Do you understand the complaint to be asserting a separate claim under regarding the zero trans fat notation? Asserting a separate claim under 21 CFR 101.13H?
I do not understand that, Your Honor, because it definitely does not. The complaint jumbles together all of the allegations. And then what is followed by that is several different claims, one under the unfair competition law, one under the California unfair advertising law, and a couple other claims, the New York business law. So the claims are not specific. The claims are based on the entire, you know, we'll call it potpourri of allegations. And I want to hit on a couple things that relates to that we heard from counsel for the appellant. Nowhere on the package does it say original ingredients. Okay, so that's not something that's on there. Partially hydrogenated oil.
Well, it says the original sundae cone, and it says original vanilla, right?
That's right. What
does original do in modifying vanilla?
I don't think it does anything. It's like the original farmer's market at 3rd and Fairfax. In L.A., it was started in 1934. What does that mean? It can mean a lot of different things, but it certainly doesn't mean that the farmers that were there in 1934 are still the suppliers of that operation. So it could mean many things to many people. It just says the original.
But shouldn't we, like, you know, Williams v. Gerber case, shouldn't have been dismissed as a matter of law. It probably should have gone back for the try of fact to determine how a reasonable consumer would, in fact, view those claims on the package.
We don't agree with that, Your Honor, and let me tell you why. Williams versus Gerber does not say that there is an immunity to a 12b6 motion in a false advertising case because a plaintiff says it's false and misleading. Otherwise, you could make crazy allegations like that are out there in the California courts today that Fruit Loops contains fruit and therefore it's false advertising. There's a case like that, a case that was dismissed, and we think properly so. So Williams versus Gerber is not controlling here. It does not address preemption anywhere.
You're arguing the facts. We're sitting here arguing about what a reasonable person would construe original to modify or what the original sundae pie means. Aren't those questions of fact?
Well, what I would do is read to you a short excerpt from a more recent case. So Gerber relied on the learning.
I'm not telling you that Gerber isn't still controlling precedent in the Ninth Circuit.
It is definitely controlling precedent, but I don't think it applies here, and here's why. Gerber relied on a case called Linear Technology Corp., a California appellate case. Since that time, the California appellate court has issued the decision in Hill versus Roll International, which we cite in our brief, May 26th of last year. And it says, and I quote, and this is the California state court talking about its own law, our division has stated in resolving an appeal based on the reasonable consumer standard following a bench trial that the standard to be used in evaluating whether an advertisement is deceptive under the UCL is purely a question of law. Other courts have stated that whether a business practice is fraudulent, deceptive, or unfair is generally a question of fact, requiring the consideration and weighing of evidence, and usually cannot be decided on demur. This is not an irreconcilable conflict. Generally and usually do not mean invariably, and a demur must be sustained when the assumed facts show the lack of a valid claim. Significantly in this case, it is very similar to the case before you in the following respect. On a water bottle, there was a green drop. The plaintiff alleged that the presence of the green drop signified that it was a superior product, same allegation we have here, and that it and it had all sorts of other implications flowing from that green drop. And the court, the state court, construing its own law, said that is not a viable claim in this court, and we can throw it out on a different ground. So
I'm sorry, I lost the chain of reasoning how that relates to Gerber.
How it relates to Gerber is that
that was not the case that Gerber relied on, right?
It was not a case that Gerber relied on. It's come out after Gerber, and it says that you can dismiss a California unfair competition claim on a demurrer.
And that's from the Court of Appeal?
It's from the Court of Appeal in California.
Gerber didn't say you couldn't. Gerber didn't say you couldn't do it. I think it was summary judgment in Gerber, too. Or maybe it was motions. But Gerber didn't say you couldn't. It said, you know, on the facts of this case, when everybody's arguing about what a reasonable consumer would perceive, this one has to have some more factual development.
That's what it said, and I don't want to overstate. What I'm saying is the California state courts, since Gerber,
is they've said almost the same thing, that, you know, sometimes it's appropriate when it's not even plausible that a reasonable consumer could believe a particular statement and a particular thing. But other times, you have to take it to trial, and you have to draw that line.
Right, and respectfully, I believe that this case is on the side of the line that warrants dismissal, and that is what the district court thought as well, and that is what the court in Hill versus Royal International thought. So courts are dismissing these claims, including California state courts, in the wake of Gerber.
Let's say it said the label said original ingredients. Would that be dismissible as well?
I think it would be a tougher case because it would be more like the Kremer case.
Really? I think I asked it to be put in the media case. that was certainly.
Yes, well, I'm thankful that we're not there. I think it would be more like the Kremer case, which is a district court case, but where the product was original Coca-Cola formula, and that formula wasn't.
And there was no cocaine.
Well, yes. Yeah, so I think it's a tough case, but it brings me back. That comment brings me back to.
And the answer is, being a tougher case, you got that twice. You said that twice.
The answer is.
If it said the original ingredients, would that be actionable? Would that be dismissible?
I think it might be. It depends. I mean, I think that there are several cases that
everything else stays the same, except I've changed the one fact. So,
in this case, certainly all of the trans fat allegations would still be out. They're preempted. So, right. That would stay the same. As to whether the plausibility is enhanced by that, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'd have to think about it more. But I think it's a tougher case, is the most I could say.
Well, assume that would be actionable. Why couldn't a reasonable consumer read the original vanilla or original sundae cone as suggesting that it had the original ingredients and not one of these newfangled late 20th century ingredients that's made in the laboratory? It's all made with sort of wholesome, well, what we used to think were wholesome things like butter and eggs.
Woody Allen in the future thinks it's wholesome things.
Yeah, that's right.
It takes us back to one of the questions earlier in the day, which is, what is the reference point? I mean, that's not alleged anywhere that consumers know what was in products in 1928 or 1934 or 1960 for that.
They have sort of a hazy vision that things were better.
Well,
it was before the Depression. It was 28, not 29. And, you know, things were nice.
Perhaps they have the better vision, but I think Judge Wardlaw made the point that probably they weren't better. Food is much safer today. Many orders of magnitude safer today than it was then.
Some days I so long for that trans fat. Yeah.
You know, the statement 0 grams of trans fat, doesn't that suggest there's no fat?
I don't think it does.
Why not?
Well, because
there's a reasonable consumer know what trans fat even is?
I think the reasonable consumer knows the difference between no trans fat and no fat, because there's an extra word in there. And I think the reasonable consumer knows to turn the package on the side, look at the nutrition facts label, which is required by law on every single package,
This particular product contains more than, what was it, 19 grams of total fat? And 10 grams of saturated fat?
I think it was 15. But
it's more.
Yes.
So why doesn't, when you use the statement 0 grams of trans fat, why weren't you required to have that additional admonition about C, the nutrient box for total fat content?
In truth and in fact, there was confusing guidance from the FDA on that. Certainly the argument could be made that that should have been on there.
Well, what was misleading about CFR 101-13-H1?
Well, we don't think anything was misleading, Your Honor. There was nothing misleading.
Wasn't that required, though?
I think arguably it was required, and the reason it wasn't on there was because there was confusing guidance from the FDA.
So why doesn't he at least state a claim with respect to that part of his argument?
Because he never stated a claim. Because you possibly can state such a claim in California, and what you have to allege to get around preemption is that there is an identical state law.
Well, doesn't California law incorporate all of the requirements of the federal FDA and the regulations?
It does, and you can make a claim under the Sherman Law. The Sherman Law is the law you're referring to, which plaintiff never made, despite the fact that he had 3 tries to do it.
In your complaint, you don't have to specifically allege the name of every statute.
Well, if you are going to invoke a Sherman Law claim under the farm-raised salmon case, which plaintiff's counsel is familiar with, it's certainly a good idea to put in there how you're doing it, what the road is to get around preemption. And the road is there's an identical state law, and that's all I'm suing on. And if that were all this plaintiff were suing on, the complaint would look one heck of a lot different because it would have no relationship to trans fat. All it would say is that I thought this was a low-fat product. And if that is really what the complaint said, it still should have been dismissed because it's not reasonable to think that when you look at the packaging as a whole.
Well, he raises the argument in the motion to dismiss.
He raised the argument in the motion to dismiss.
In response to your motion to dismiss.
He did raise the argument, but right. He never asked
for... But the district court didn't address it head on.
He never asked for leave to plead the claim. I don't think the claim, in fairness, Your Honor, the district court is supposed to have a real pleading and be able to evaluate it. He gave the plaintiff 3 chances that weren't, that it wasn't put in there in that manner in a clear way. As you pointed out, you even asked, does the complaint separately allege it? It doesn't separately allege it. It's not laid out that way. It's all mishmash.
Before you run out of time, is the claim for injunction moot? It's given that the label no longer shows.
It's definitely moot. It's now over 3 years since it's been removed. We're not putting it back on there. We're not going to put it back on there. So
is that a commitment?
Well,
this is being recorded, and you will be held to it. No, I'm quite serious. This will be called judicial estoppel. So, are you representing that your client will not put that on the label?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I thank Your Honors for your time.
Okay. Anthony, I think you have a little over 2 minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just want to address a couple of high points in response to my counsel representing the defendant. With respect to the original terminology, it's interesting what defense counsel stated. He says original can mean many things to many different people. Well, that's exactly right. And that's why the defense interpretation of that term, which of course they're going to downplay the meaning of it to a consumer, as well as the judge's interpretation is wrong, to rule as a matter of law that interpretation is the only interpretation. Gerber case is directly, absolutely on point. The facts of it are strikingly similar to this particular situation. It is governing authority.
Here's my problem with your position. I'll give you a chance to just respond to it. I after looking at this whole case, I thought, it's ice cream, it's chocolate, it's nuts, it's sugar. How can anybody reasonably think that this is healthy in this day and age? Right? And even without having any understanding of what's a trans fat, what's a saturated fat, and anything about particular fats, how is this healthy?
Sure. Well, there's 2 responses to that. One is whether or not it's in fact healthy is irrelevant.
But your argument that the original was somehow better for the consumer, it's based on whether it's healthier for the consumer, really.
Well, that may be one reason that the consumer was motivated to go after a product advertised as having original ingredients. Another consumer may have another motivation, but the motivation itself is not one of the elements you have to prove. All you have to show is, did the defendant use a statement that was deceptive or confusing?
Right, that implies that the product is a better choice than the products without the claim. Better in what way? I mean, obviously better in terms of not being harmful to their health in this case.
That is in fact why this particular plaintiff bought it, but it doesn't necessarily, you don't have to prove that to show that the claim itself is deceptive. In fact, as the Gerber case suggests, a plaintiff in this type of situation should be allowed to develop more evidence, either through marketing surveys or consumer surveys. We have not been allowed to do that. This is actually just at the motion to dismiss stage, which, just like Gerber was. As Gerber also pointed out, it's not difficult to choose statements, designs, and devices which will not deceive. This claim is obviously confusing consumers. If it's open to many different interpretations, it's obviously deceptive, or can be at least developed to be deceptive before a prior of fact. It should not be dismissed on a motion to dismiss. And also, Your Honor, with respect to the how can health ice cream be healthy, believe it or not, I believe it's a $3 billion industry out there regarding healthy ice cream. The defendant makes a product called Skinny Cow, which is an ice
cream. Does it sound like it would taste very good?
I will admit I have not tasted it, but it has no trans fat. It doesn't have any partially hydrogenated oil. So
you wouldn't try it, taste it twice.
I wouldn't try to taste it twice.
You wouldn't do it twice.
Probably
it's
not.
I sell it at Costco. I bought it all once.
Yes. It sounds like we're taking judicial notice of that.
Let me ask you about mootness. What is your answer to opposing counsel's argument that they claim for an injunction based on the trans fat is not moot because they don't have it on the label and don't plan to put it back or will not put it back?
It doesn't have the force of law, so it's not moot.
But it does have the force of law. If we rule that, if we base our ruling on that representation, then it does have the force of law. It's called judicial estoppel. They're bound by it. They can't go back. If they ever do, you can take it to court and get attorney's fees.
Well, while the injunctive relief aspect might, in fact, be moot if they are, in fact, judicially stopped by counsel's representation here, there are other remedies to be sought as well.
For the past use of that, we're now talking only about the 0% trans
fat. That's correct.
Aspect of it. And so I got your answer on injunctive relief. So you're saying even if that's moot, there are other remedies. What would be the other remedies?
Sure, there's restitution, which is one of the claims under the UCL, as well as the CLRA. So that'd be a monetary relief.
I see. Okay.
In addition to the injunctive relief.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Honors.
Case is how you pay some money.